Advocates of Esperanto were accused of belonging to an international conspiracy that was seen as subversive of communism. They were in large numbers arrested and sent to the camps or shot. Non-Russian nationalities were also particularly targeted, accused of bourgeois nationalism. Religious believers, especially peasants who refused to work on feast days, were arrested and punished as a particular targeted group. And in fact, anybody who was asked by the secret police to serve as an informer within their place of work or among their friends or in their organization, if you refused to be an informer, you were certainly an enemy of the people and you would suffer the same fate. At its worst, even children were expected to denounce their parents and their neighbors for any criticisms they might have overheard of the regime of Stalin personally. And those children who were known to have turned in their parents, for whom arrest and exile and sometimes execution followed, those heroic children were publicly praised in the schools and in the press as role models for every young Soviet child to follow. The scope of this terror is in fact difficult to measure. We have no reliable statistics, but we have some sense of its dimensions. Communists suffered disproportionately. Almost the entire pre-revolutionary Bolshevik leadership was exterminated between 1936 and 1938. For example, of the entire Politburo, the political bureau, the leaders of the party, in 1924, after Lenin's death, his heirs in a way, almost every one of them, including of course Bukharin, were shot or committed suicide before they were arrested, knowing what was inevitable. Only two people from the 1924 Politburo survived after the end of the 1930s. One of them was Trotsky, who was no longer in the country. He was living in Mexico, but the secret police caught up with him by 1940, and he was assassinated in his home, leaving only one survivor of the 1924 Politburo, Stalin. In fact, even the Central Committee of 1934, mostly post-1917 members, most of them pro-Stalin in the earlier years, of those, 80% were executed or driven to suicide before they could be arrested and shot. And the rank and file of the party did little better than the leadership. Of 2.8 million party members registered in 1934, the one where we have fairly clear records, about a million of these were arrested and perhaps as many as two-thirds executed. In addition to the party, other institutions were also decimated by the terror, notably the Red Army. A massive purge began in the army in 1937. This is a time in which war was looming. At least everybody in the press and in the government was talking about the likely threat of an invasion, probably coming from Nazi Germany, but perhaps from the whole Western world. At this moment, with war anticipated, half of the entire officer corps was executed during this great purge, something like 35,000 men. Almost all senior officers were arrested and mostly executed. In fact, some have argued that Hitler, who knew about this purge of the army, was encouraged to attack Russia 4 years later, knowing the army was still so weak in terms of leadership. No one knows the exact numbers of people who perished and suffered during the Great Terror. Several million, we know, were arrested, mostly common people, but disproportionately elites. The estimates of the number who were shot and died in the camps ranges from tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands to millions. And I should add that the effects of the terror were not limited just to those who were arrested and sent to the camps and perhaps shot. Not only the immediate victims suffered, but this person's friends, their relatives, family members, all should be counted in some ways as victims of the Great Terror. Now, this horrible story of repression and terror is part of the story of the 1930s, but only part of it. To truly make sense of this time, one also has to take note of and try to make sense of what might seem like its opposite, a story of public pleasure and joy in the 1930s.